Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix, May 16th. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
Welcome to Criminalia, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Dr. Williams' pink pills for pale people were marketed as a remedy for lots of things, as we'll see. But one of those things was how it promised to cure anemia, specifically the symptoms of iron deficiency anemia and chlorosis. Chlorosis is actually a type of iron deficiency anemia, and its hallmark is a greenish tint to your skin. Anemia was commonly diagnosed in adolescent girls and women in the 19th century, and common symptoms include pale skin, weakness, fatigue, dizziness, heart palpitations, and just sort of a general malaise. The pink in the name, by the way, that was a nod to the rosy complexion of all the cured patients who'd used the product. And here's the thing about these pink pills. They may have actually worked. Maybe a little bit. Welcome to Criminalia. I'm Maria Tremarchi.
And I'm Holly Fry. Dr. Williams' pink pills for pale people were advertised as a cure-all. Here's what they actually were. Coated in a pink-colored jacket of sugar, an analysis of the pills conducted in 1909 for the British Medical Association revealed that the pills were a combination of an iron compound and magnesium sulfate, and some sugar and a pinch of powdered licorice. You might know magnesium sulfate as Epsom salt. It's a chemical compound made up of magnesium, sulfur, and oxygen, and today it's used for potential health benefits like relieving muscle pain. The iron component is the star here. We've seen the included iron listed in different forms on different pink pill labels, in related pamphlets, and even in the results of government chemical analysis. Iron oxide, citrated iron chloride, sulfate of iron, and ferrous fumarate are all the potential forms. These forms of iron are, by the way, everywhere. You'll find them used as a colorant in cosmetics, food, personal care products, ink, paint, and plastics. Even sometimes concrete. Some sunscreens contain it for its photoprotective properties, and you will also find it in the pharmaceutical industry, including as treatment for iron deficiency anemia.
Basically, the pills were an iron supplement, which theoretically could have benefited people with iron deficiency anemia, though the iron content we're talking about here was notably pretty low. Because approximately one-third of the iron in the pills had oxidized in the samples that chemists used during the 1909 analysis, they concluded that the pills had been, quote, very carelessly prepared. The formula went through several changes over the years, and one late-in-the-game version included aloe for its laxative properties. Like the health benefits of an iron supplement for someone with anemia, this isn't bunk information. Today, aloe is used as a stimulant laxative.
When we talk about patent medicines, it's easy to lump them all together under an umbrella of substances that contain dangerous ingredients. There were mostly two types of ingredients lists for these unregulated drugs in their heyday. Some were simply a combination of flavoring, coloring, and aromatics, and while they didn't work, they weren't harmful. But others contain dangerous opiates, alcohol, or strychnine, for instance, and those could be lethal if the dosage was too high. The so-called remedy was often worse than the disease in those cases. But those products that didn't injure or kill you, like the pink pills, were problematic in a different way, and that's how they were advertised. Often, patent medicine manufacturers did not follow through on their health promises. And that's ultimately it. That is what got a lot of people in trouble. Those big promises with no delivery.
Originally produced and patented in 1866 by Dr. William Frederick Jackson, who was a real physician in Ontario, Canada, The pink pills were promoted and marketed as a cure for digestive problems, malaria, wound healing, and general poor mental health. The remedy picked up more healing promises over the years and was advertised in the Ventura Free Press in 1896 as a tonic that would also cure, quote, the blood and nerves to treat anemia, lack of energy, depression, and poor appetite. By the end of the decade, advertisements for the pills began to claim they had a lot more benefits. They were claimed to be a restorative for partial paralysis, sciatica, neuralgia, rheumatism, tension headaches, influenza, heart palpitations, pale and sallow complexions, all forms of weakness, either in male or female, and all diseases resulting from the, quote, vitiated humors in the blood. And that transformation of the pink pills into a cure-all is due to a man named George Fulford.
George Taylor Fulford of Brockville, Ontario, Canada, bought the patent for the pills in 1890 and turned them into an international brand and a sensation. Fulford had attended business school before apprenticing at his brother William's drugstore. He took over that business when he was 22 years old. 5 years later, he was elected to the first of what would be 12 terms as an alderman. He didn't enter the patent medicine trade until he was in his mid-30s, and he certainly made an entrance. The international success of the pink pills is due to the marketing prowess of this Canadian politician, Senator George Fulford. Fulford formed G.T. Fulford & Company in 1887 to manufacture and distribute patent medicines. 3 years after opening, that company acquired the rights to Dr. Williams' pink pills for pale people, allegedly paying $53.01 to Dr. William Jackson for the recipe. Fulford was listed in the Chemist and Druggist Journal as the owner of the Dr. Williams Medicine Company, having purchased the patent. In fact, he marketed the pink pills through the Dr. Williams Medicine Company, which he had turned into the trading arm of G.T. Fulford & Company. And he made a fortune. Within 5 years, he expanded the Dr. Williams Medicine Company not only throughout North America, but into Europe, including the United Kingdom, and all across the British Empire. In all, he advertised the pink pills in all of their healing glory in more than 80 countries from Canada to Australia.
We're going to take a break for a word from our sponsors. When we're back, we'll be sharing examples of marketing and advertising copy for the pink pills, and how firsthand testimonials were plentiful and super important in these campaigns.
Hey, everybody, it's Holly. Listen, I've been doing stuff on stage since I was a kid, which means that I have been doing my makeup since I was a kid. And I can turn out a look when I need to, but on my day-to-day, I really like to keep it a little more relaxed and low-key. I don't have time for a full face most of the time. But that also means that Thrive Cosmetics can have me covered no matter what I'm doing, whether I'm doing something on stage, like I have an appearance or a live show, or I'm just running to the grocery store. Something in their line is perfect. And what I really love and what's important to me is that they are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free. And to me, cruelty-free is very important in the cosmetics I use. I mentioned that I've been doing my makeup for a long time. I've gotten older in that time. And one of the things that I've done to refresh my look is switch over to their Brilliant Eye Brighteners and use something like a rose gold shade to really like go all around my eye and then just blend it out and get a daytime smoky look. It makes me look a little more youthful and more refreshed. And it's just easy as pie. And it means that I don't have to mess with a whole ton of products. Refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/criminalia. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/criminalia for 10% off your first order.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of our favorite Netflix series, Bridgerton. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? And meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. And I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
Welcome back to Criminalia. Let's talk about how the marketing and advertising of Dr. Williams' pink pills worked.
Beginning in the early 1890s, the publicity for the pink pills was written by one guy, John Mackenzie, a Canadian businessman who also had journalism experience. In 1892, he was made manager of the medicine company and held the position until his retirement in 1929. When it comes to the pink pills, he may as well have been the chemist. His copy and campaigns were of most importance to the bottom line. Under his and Fulford's watch, an early advertisement in the Ventura Free Press went like this. It described two men walking down the street. One, quote, has a vigorous, firm, elastic step, his head well up, his eyes bright, while the other appeared to be a man, quote, broken in health, who had to, quote, whip himself to every task. Claimed to the ad, the first man had healthy nerves because they were, quote, stimulated by feeding them with Dr. Williams' pink pills.
It would be remiss to not mention that Fulford launched a huge marketing campaign for the pink pills and spent upwards of £200,000 on advertising in the year 1900 alone, and that is just in Britain. The tale of this patent medicine company is less about the ingredients of the product being a problem. It was that over-the-top marketing and advertising campaign of lies that finally caught the attention of federal authorities. And, of course, we have examples.
So another advertisement for the pills comes from the Maryborough Chronicle, which recommended they be taken as a blood and energy restorative for flu sufferers. Quote, the blood is the most dependable weapon in the fight against disease, and when the enemy is as violent as influenza, there is no better blood builder than Dr. Williams' pink pills. It was a perfect time to market the pills as a cure against flu, as the global flu pandemic of 1918 to 1920, also known by the common misnomer Spanish flu, was raging and deadly. While it made for great marketing campaigns, the pills sure didn't cure the flu.
Advertisements were carefully crafted to convey all sorts of important information to the consumer, from what these things could cure to how to get some for yourself. One such example is as follows, quote, Dr. Williams' pink pills for pale people have cured countless men and women of anemia, indigestion, eczema, rheumatism, sciatica, St. Vitus's dance, now known as Sydenham's chorea, neuralgia, nervous disorders, paralysis, and locomotor ataxia. Sold at shops, but avoid substitutes and take care that the full name Dr. Williams' pink pills for pale people is on every package. Sold by all chemists and druggists. An interesting illustrated pamphlet describing many cures will be sent post-free on application. Yes, you could get a whole pamphlet outlining the alleged benefits of the pink pills.
Advertisements also claimed the pills purified the blood by, well, by making new blood. And this happened, it was explained, by, quote, enriching the existing weak or anemic blood supply. The pills would, the copy promised, quote, tone up the nerves and increase the patient's power of using the food he takes.
Fulford and Mackenzie's advertisement campaigns also began to target women specifically and claimed that the pills were a remedy for many, quote, female ailments. One stated that men seek, quote, wholesome-looking women with rosy cheeks and good health as their future wives. The advertisement warned that without help, a woman's, quote, regular monthly uterine action could result in a, quote, pale and sallow complexion and a feeling of exhaustion. This ad also claimed that continued use of the pills would, quote, fortify the system against the ravages of the symptoms attending menopause.
Claims of these exaggerated benefits were almost constantly in the face of consumers, whether seen in newspapers or other print media, or promoted by salesmen and even sometimes physicians. Another advertisement focused on women, for instance, read, quote, "Many thin, anemic girls and women have been wonderfully transformed by Dr. Williams' brand Pink Pills. Instead of being weak, flat-chested, pale, and lacking in charm, they are now bright and bonny with sparkling eyes, rosy cheeks, and a graceful, well-proportioned form. Full of life and vitality, they are now the envy and admiration of their friends. These happy results are easily explained. Dr. Williams' pink pills contain the necessary vital elements that create new, rich red blood. So, lose no time. Improve your health and regain your lost weight by taking a course of Dr. Williams' pink pills. You too can gain a graceful figure."
Fulford and McKenzie relied, quote, "heavily on testimonials submitted by customers of miraculous recoveries, printed in newspapers in such a way that it was difficult to differentiate news articles from the advertisements." They kind of were early forebears of the advertorial. For instance, Reverend Enoch Hill of the First United Methodist Church of Grand Junction, Iowa, endorsed the product in many 1900s advertisements, claiming that the pink pills boosted his energy and cured his chronic headaches.
Another printed testimonial, this one in a British paper, read as, quote, "Said Mrs. Hatch, I was sickly, pale, and anemic when I was approaching the age of 20. In spite of all treatment, I could get no real relief. My sister insisted I try Dr. Williams' pink pills for pale people, and at last, I did. It took several boxes of these pills before I obtained any real relief. Then I was encouraged by signs of improvement. And as I continued the pills, all signs of anemia vanished. The rheumatic pains left me, and my strength was gradually built up. I felt younger and was in sound health. Today I am free from all pain with no fears of illness."
Inside and outside the United States, marketing materials were very boasty, and not just from satisfied customers who picked up some pills at the local druggist. Testimonial from Dr. Giuseppe Lapponi, who was chief physician to Pope Leo XIII, was held up as an example of a medical professional using Dr. Williams' pink pills in his practice with, quote, "good results."
The pink pills, it was also claimed, were a, quote, "miracle cure for consumption," which we now know as tuberculosis. A British advertising pamphlet for the pills, called The Queen's Gift, published in 1900, give or take a year there, was aimed at British colonists around the world. The pamphlet claimed that because of, quote, "an inspiring entrepreneurial environment, Dr. Williams was able to develop his pink pills, a miracle of modern medicine." The pamphlet also provided several testimonials, of course, from grateful patients cured by the pills. Among them was a Mr. Rogers, the, quote, "first Englishman to be cured of tubercular consumption. Knowing the ingredients, those pink pills were not likely what cured him, but potential customers didn't know that."
We're going to take a break here for a word from our sponsors. And when we return, we'll talk more about the big promises that patent medicine companies made and why the pink pills may have worked a little bit, possibly, but only if you had anemia.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of our favorite Netflix series, Bridgerton. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? And meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. And I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
Welcome back to Criminalia. Let's talk about what happened when the Pink Pills product went up against the United States Pure Food and Drug Act. It's probably not a spoiler that the company lost, but maybe not for reasons you might think.
Fulford became a wealthy man selling patent medicine around the world, but he's sometimes remembered for quite a different and very tragic story rather than hawking harmless pills. At the age of 53 in 1905, Fulford's vehicle was hit by a streetcar and he was ejected from the automobile on Walnut Street in Newton, Massachusetts. Fulford was fatally injured and he became the first Canadian known to have died in an auto accident. After his death, Fulford's son, also named George, became involved in the business.
Shortly after Fulford's death, the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906, also known as Wiley's Law, was signed by United States President Theodore Roosevelt. And as we've seen happen in other stories of snake oil sales this season, its very existence dimmed the popularity of many patent medicines in the United States, including the pink pills, or it made the so-called medicines impossible to purchase. The act's purpose was to prevent the, quote, manufacture, sale, or transportation of adulterated or misbranded or poisonous or deleterious food, drugs, medications, and liquors. With patent medicines coming under increasing scrutiny in the early 20th century, the law also required that active ingredients be displayed on labels and a standard of purity levels for ingredients to be set by the United States Pharmacopoeia or the National Formulary. If they didn't get you for problematic ingredients, they could and would bring you down for false or fraudulent advertising. And it was also a truth in labeling law, and misbranding was a very big deal.
The label on one still remaining package of Dr. Williams' Pink Pills for Pale People reads as a mail order ad. And it read, quote, safe and effective tonic for the blood and nerves. Anemic conditions, diseases caused by or dependent on thin, impoverished blood, and for nervous disorders resulting from malnutrition. Useful wherever a nervine or digestive tonic is required. These pills are guaranteed to contain no opiates or narcotics. Contents, 40 pills. Price, 50 cents. 6 boxes for $2.50. The Dr. Williams Medical Company, Schenectady, New York, and Brockville, Ontario. W.T. Hansen Company, Schenectady, New York, U.S. Distributors. Directions inside in English, French, German, Spanish, Italian. The pink pills were also sold in small numbers and over the counter, and that helped increase both Fulford's profits and it made the pills available to poorer consumers who weren't able to afford a whole expensive package all at once.
Before the new law, proprietors did not at all have to prove their patent medicines were effective, nor did they have to prove anything they claimed on the label. And to be honest, most of them didn't bother with that after the law was enacted either, instead hedging their bets that the government wouldn't catch up with them. In 1916, the United States government caught up with the Dr. Williams Medical Company.
Dr. Williams' pink pills were targeted not because people were sick or dying from them. They were pretty benign, but because of the company's outrageous claims and promises regarding the medicine's curative qualities. Many patent medicines claimed to cure everything from, quote, generalized debility to other complaints like lassitude and weak stomach fibers. And all of those promises were the key to patent medicine's success. They were the hook. What were your other choices if you were someone with a health complaint? Wait it out? Maybe see a doctor for a round of bloodletting? No thank you, said many people. While consumers didn't seem to mind the ridiculous claims that a product could cure your acne and bring you back to life and essentially put dinner on the table, exaggerated promises got a lot of patent medicine peddlers in trouble. A jury found in favor of the United States government, and all the dreams that pink pills promised were shattered, because shipments of the product were ordered to be destroyed.
So did they work? Though the pink pills couldn't stand up to the wild marketing claims that they were a cure-all, the pills were actually potentially medically helpful to some people living with anemia who took them. In theory. Maybe. Hey, we're not doctors here, but while the ingredients were weak, They were iron supplements, which we do know is important for the management and treatment of iron deficiency anemia. Those testimonials may not have all been total BS.
Some people may have felt a little
bit better. A little bit better, a little less pale.
You know what makes me feel better? A little cocktail. Are you ready for some cures what ails you?
A little cocktail would add a little rosy cheeks to my life. What are we doing?
Right? Right? Obviously, I'm not reinventing the wheel. We're calling this the pink pill. Thinking about this, it immediately put me in mind of a drink that cracks me up and is one that I can't imagine many people really enjoying unless you just really love gin. And that is a pink gin. A pink gin, you can buy pink gin on the shelves now in your local liquor store. They just have pink gins. They've gotten very popular because people like pink things. But a pink gin was actually a drink that was invented in the mid-1800s, which is literally just 2 ounces of gin and like 3 dashes of Angostura bitters. And some bartenders would thin it a little bit with water. But unless you love gin, which some people do, but I don't think a whole lot like straight gin. Yeah. This is probably not a delicious drink. But I thought that might make a good start for another drink.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's also that little mention of licorice, the very beginning of this episode that was in the pills.
Yeah.
So I thought, how is a way we can just low grade include some licorice flavor in here without getting too out of control? We're going to start with that pink gin base. We're not going to buy pink gin. You don't have to. You got bitters. If you don't have bitters, we have an option. It'll come up at the mocktail. But we're going to start with 2 ounces of gin. 3 to 4 dashes of Angostura bitters. That's what turns it pink. It has bitters have a reddish quality to them. Angostura does anyway. And so that's what gives it a pink look. And then you're going to add, oh, just a kiss, like 1/8 of an ounce of anisette to get that licorice flavor in there. You don't want a lot more than that. It's not yummy. It becomes a different drink.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to do between 1/4 and 1/3 of an ounce of simple syrup or vanilla syrup. And that is to your taste. There's no wrong way. You are going to give this a nice, good shake with ice. Make it super cold. Pour it over ice in like a rocks glass or whatever glass you wish. Whatever serving vessel makes you happy. And then you'll top it with ginger ale. And the ginger ale is the reason that I say there's not a one right measure for the syrup, because if you're using like a regular sugared ginger ale, you might want to pull it back. If you're using a sugar-free, you might want to pour a little more syrup in
there.
But this fixes the problem for me of just straight gin, and it makes it quite lovely. And that little kiss of licorice flavor is really quite nice, and it just gives a little more depth. It brings out some of the more floral notes. This is also one that, in my opinion, went through an uncharacteristically large number of tests for me. Usually I'm pretty fast. I can whip out a couple and I figured out.
But this one,
some of it was A/B testing. I was like, okay, what if we use this gin versus this gin? What if we made it with absinthe instead of anisette? Don't do that, is my advice. I did not like it at all. And I tried it with club soda instead of ginger ale, and it just tasted a little too thin. You need a little more flavor in there to make it all work, but it is quite yummy. If you would like to make an alcohol-free pink pill, that is very easy. We're going to do what we've been doing for a while now and use flat tonic water as your gin substitute, 2 ounces of that. If you're okay with bitters, because some people that don't drink are still okay with bitters because it is a tiny amount, you can put those in. If you don't want to do bitters, literally a drop of whatever red syrup you have on hand. If you have grenadine, great. If you have hibiscus, great. There's not enough of it that it's going to shift the flavor around too much, especially when you consider that volume to the amount of gin or fake gin in this case you have. Mm-hmm. So you're good. Anisette syrups or licorice syrups are pretty easy to get a hold of. And then your simple syrup and then your ginger ale. Everything is the same. So again, that's 2 ounces of gin or your flat tonic, 3 to 4 dashes of Angostura bitters or 1 drop of the red syrup of your choice. 1/8 of an ounce of anisette or a licorice syrup. 1/4 to 1/3 of an ounce of simple or vanilla syrup, and then shake it over ice, top it with ginger ale. Delicious. It's not going to fix any of your ailments.
It's definitely not.
If you drink enough of anything, you'll feel like you don't have any ailments. please don't be unwise. Drink responsibly. But yeah, that's the pink pill. You're still going to be anemic if you started with anemia. That won't fix a thing. But like I said, you might feel better. Also, if you think you're anemic, please see a doctor.
We've lifted the symptoms, the most common ones.
Yeah, we are so thankful that you spent this time with us today talking about pink pills for pale people, which is a phrase I just love. We will be right back here next week with another story of snake oil and another cocktail to go with it.
Criminalia is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, please visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.